I just think he's, I hate to say it, but I think he's a little penny wise, the pound short.
The congressional delegation reacts to the president's jobs proposal. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, September 8th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, criticism of a fee increase for climbing Denali.
This is a tax on the right of the people to walk on their own public land.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
The Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Alaska's congressional delegation is giving the president's speech tonight on jobs mixed reviews, mostly along party lines. President Obama laid out a plan he's calling the American Jobs Act.
It will create more jobs for construction workers, more jobs for teachers, more jobs for veterans, and more jobs for long-term unemployed. It will provide a tax break for companies who hire new workers, and it will cut payroll taxes in half for every working American and every small business.
It would cut payroll taxes and give companies a payroll tax holiday if they add workers or increase wages. Companies that hire veterans or the long-term unemployed would get tax credits. And it calls for improving schools and internet access. APRN's Libby Casey joins us from the Capitol Building in Washington. Good evening, Libby.
Hi, Lori.
Senator Begich said yesterday that he needed to hear the president talk about infrastructure, roads, tangible projects. Was he pleased?
Yeah, Senator Begich was overall pleased. Let's take a listen to his reaction.
Generally, I think what he's saying to us in Congress is, you know, here's a plan, and you know, I agree with some of the items, not all of them, but I think what he's saying is, look, this is not complicated. The American people are telling us what we need to do. There's great ideas from Democrats and Republicans. Let's just get going and get it done.
Senator Begich says the president emphasized growing small businesses and getting money back into the hands of Americans through things like the payroll tax deduction. He was disappointed, though, that the president didn't talk more about resource development. Begich says he could take action on that directly within his own administration. He wouldn't have to wait for Congress to greenlight some of the development projects he'd like to see in the oil and gas industry. Now, the real thing here, though, is that the senator says President Obama is asking Congress to move forward on some things that are already on the table, and Begich says they're ready to do that. He'd like to see the tax breaks end for the wealthiest Americans, and that's one of the ways the president wants to pay for this.
The president singled out the oil and gas industry and the tax breaks they get. How did the delegation react to that?
Well, that's right. He kind of gave it an either or. You know, either we can keep giving these subsidies to the oil and gas industry, or we can fix schools and use the money for other purposes. The delegation was not necessarily pleased, although Senator Begich said, look, he wasn't just saying we're only going to target that industry. He's talking about tax reform across the board, which I can support. Now, Senator Murkowski and Congressman Don Young were not pleased by that at all, and said that stood out to them as something that they didn't necessarily want to hear. And they both said that's really, you know, throwing pennies into the pond that needs to be filled up with lots more money than that.
Some of the items President Obama talked about tonight already have bipartisan support. Did the Republicans in the Alaska delegation say they're signed on to some of the measures he addressed?
Yeah, well, Senator Murkowski said she thinks it's wise the president attached his plan to some proposals that are already in Congress and are already actually working their way through the system. For example, the highway bill. It's already getting bipartisan support in Congress. So when the president says, pass the bill, or pass my bill, Senator Murkowski says, well, we're already working hard on these issues. She overall was not impressed with the speech. And here's one comment that Senator Murkowski made.
I was really not very impressed throughout the first half. His constant refrain of, you must pass this bill, I kind of felt like he was trying to sell us something, like one of the guys on TV that says, you know, you must buy this car. He needed to persuade not only the Congress, but the American people that he has a plan.
And Senator Murkowski's wondering how this is all going to get paid for. We didn't entirely see that rolled out yet.
The president did not spell out exactly how this could be paid for. He says that will come about a week from Monday. Does the delegation buy what he's selling?
Well, the Republicans are concerned. And one thing the president said is that he wants this super committee that's been formed to come up with even more cuts than they were charged to do. And Congressman Young says he's having some real questions about how this is going to actually get funded. Now, Congressman Young is not in Washington right now. He watched the speech on TV from Alaska, more or less. Here's what he had to say.
I just think he's, I hate to say it, I think the presentation was fair, but I think most of all, though, he's the penny wise and pound short.
That's Congressman Don Young, who says what he wants to see is rolling back regulations, real development, and that's not what he heard tonight. So a mixed reaction from the delegation.
Thanks, Libby.
Thank you, Lori.
APRN's Libby Casey at the Capitol building, where the president spoke tonight to a joint session of Congress. The regional manager of the Small Business Administration's International Trade Finance Programs is in Alaska encouraging small business owners to consider growing sales by exporting their goods and service. Prue Balotero has worked with the SBA for 30 years and says trade treaties with other nations continue to expand, and SBA loan guarantees for helping businesses get started with exporting have increased from $2 million to $5 million in the past year under the Recovery Act. He says boosting loan guarantee maximums are designed to stimulate lending.
We provide to the lender a 90% loan guarantee, so that only puts the lender at a 10% risk and encourages, and that's the whole idea, encourages lenders to make these kinds of loans.
Balotero says he was at an export conference in Washington in the spring of 2010 when President Obama showed up and introduced his National Export Initiative to the group. The president set a goal of doubling the nation's exports within 5 years, and Balotero says last year the nation saw an increase of 20% for exports. He says too many small businesses don't consider how exporting can help grow their company.
And I've seen, you know, firms start off with small exports, and pretty soon they've increased. Pretty soon they're, I have to hire some people. They hire two or three, and next in a year or so, it's, you know, another 10. It's just marvelous to see that in action.
Balotero says the SBA has a free online training course called Take Your Business Global with an accompanying textbook to help businesses get started in exporting.
We're trying to give them a comfort area, a zone, that getting into exporting if they've never did it before. And with that, then things mesh and they get that first order and they get paid. it'll just start to snowball.
Balotero will be speaking tomorrow morning at the BP Energy Center in Anchorage as part of the seminar called Successful Exporting in Today's Global Economy. The event begins at 9 a.m. The price to build the proposed Donlin gold mine has shot up by billions of dollars. That's according to one of the major developers. NovaGold Resources released a new construction estimate for the remote mine site that puts the figure at $7 billion. For member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson has more.
It was 2009 when NovaGold estimated it would take $4.5 billion to build what could become North America's largest gold mine. But a lot has changed in 3 years. For one, inflation and the increasing price for many construction materials. Another thing that's changed is the plan to power the mine. Developers have floated several ideas over the years. Now they've shifted away from barging diesel fuel up the Kuskokwim River in favor of piping natural gas from Cook Inlet. After a summer exploring a 310-mile route, NovaGold says the pipeline will add another $1 billion to that price tag. NovaGold is a 50% partner with Barrick Gold at the proposed Donlin Mine, located more than 200 miles up the Kuskokwim River. Barrick Gold is an international mining giant with more than a dozen major mines. Not so for NovaGold, who is not yet producing gold and is banking on Donlin Creek to be its big money maker. NovaGold stocks fell by 11% the day after the announcement was made, but remained within the year's range of prices. They say the estimate is preliminary and will be revised as part of the feasibility study they hope to complete by the end of this year. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Shane Iverson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new life for a tribal tannery in Sitka.
We're producing hides for grandmas and aunties and cousins that live out in villages or other cities for them to do high quality work.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
Senator Mark Begich says 31 Alaska post offices are no longer under the threat of closure. In late July, the cash-strapped Postal Service announced it would study 36 branches in Alaska for possible closure or consolidation. The five post offices that remain under review are the Anchorage Postal Store and sites in Douglas, at Fort Wainwright, and at Elmendorf and Eielson Air Force Bases. Juneau residents turned out in force last night to urge U.S. Postal Service officials not to close the Douglas Post Office. And for the approximately 150 people who packed the Mount Jumbo Gym last night, it's more than just a place to pick up mail and send packages. It's part of the community. In fact, Douglas Post Office clerks Lee Kearney and Dean Ruby were grand marshals of the Douglas 4th of July parade last year, as pointed out by John Sandor and others.
I would be shocked if there's another post office in the country that had whose postal workers served as grand marshals.
Most of those who testified were Douglas residents who like the convenience of having a post office nearby. But several said they live on the Juneau side of the bridge, but drive into Douglas rather than use the federal building station downtown. Jack Cadigan gave his top three reasons why he prefers Douglas.
Parking, parking, and parking. I counted, perhaps incorrectly, but 13 parking spaces, 30 minutes each, to service the main post office and the entire federal building, all seven stores and all the other agencies that are there. There's 15 right down here on Douglas. We can come over here with packages. We can bring them in. We can get them shipped. We can get them mailed. And it's great.
Edwin Soto, president of the American Postal Workers Union Local 3323 in Juneau, said seniors, people with disabilities, and businesses in Douglas would take the biggest hit if the post office were to close. He argued the Postal Service's savings would be modest at best, and said the real reason for the agency's financial problems is a 2006 postal reform law that requires the USPS to pre-fund future retiree health care benefits.
An obligation that no other federal agency or private business must bear.
Diane Horbachuk, U.S. Postal Service District Manager for Alaska, was one of three Anchorage-based USPS officials who heard the testimony. She said public input will be just one of the factors taken into consideration as the agency decides which post offices to shutter. Another factor she mentioned was the cost of running each location.
At this point, we have not made that decision. We're going to go back and look at all our data, take into account the comments, and make a decision. If we do make a decision that goes against what the community feels it should be, then you will be given the notice of what to do for what we would call an appeal. And that will be spelled out, and we will post that in the post office.
Earlier this week, Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe warned Congress that the Postal Service could lose $10 billion in the fiscal year that closes at the end of this month, and the agency is in danger of defaulting as it reaches its borrowing limit. Federal grants have helped the Sitka Tribe of Alaska purchase a building for its tribal tannery. And now that the 7-year-old business has a new home, tribal officials are hoping for its long-term success. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
The Sitka Tribal Tannery isn't new. It began in 2004, but this year it bought its own building in the 4600 block of Halibut Point Road, and with the help of grants from the federal government, some new equipment is on the way. Officials with the Sitka Tribe of Alaska, which runs the tannery, say they hope this is the beginning of a long life for the operation. James Young is hoping for the same thing. He's been working at the tannery for a little more than a year. He's standing next to an enormous vat of liquid and fur.
What I have in here is I have two black bears and a brown bear, and this is in a pickle.
He reaches in and grabs the brown bear, which is very heavy, as you might expect, and he slings it up onto a table, spreads it out, and then moves it over to a device called a round knife. He says he spends about 4 hours a day at this machine, shaving the leather part of the hide down to a uniform thickness.
You gotta know just about how hard to push or pull against it, and then it takes a little bit of time to learn how far you can pull each time you pull, how big a scallops you can make.
Away from the round knife is a small room hidden by a sheet of plastic. Some of the completed hides hang there. Otters, seals, brown bears, a polar bear.
This was a very fun animal to work on. He's about almost 9 foot long. So, and we only measure from the tip of the nose to the tip of the tail. So this bear is actually a lot longer than 9 feet.
Right now, Young and another man, Russell James, work at the tannery with a technician on call. But the tribe estimates that 28 part-time jobs could be created by the tannery's operation. Not at the tannery directly, but further down the line, in the form of people who can use the tannery's products to produce their own work. Again, James Young.
We really enjoy what we're doing, and in our imagination, we're producing hides for grandmas and aunties and cousins that live out in villages or other cities for them to do high-quality work and make high-quality garments for their kids, their grandchildren, or their nieces and nephews, or whoever it is that they'll be making garments for.
The tribe began getting requests to start a tannery in the mid-1990s, says Mike Miller, a tribal council member who also sits on the tribe's Marine Mammal Commission.
Quite possibly at the time, it was more of a cultural component than a business component. You know, to blend the two together, and timing-wise with the sea otter situation in Southeast, you know, with an abundant population and concerns about, you know, whether you agree or not, some people think overpopulation of sea otters. This is, you know, poised to be able to help address that as well.
To say nothing, he says, of employment for tribal citizens.
If they can take a couple hides and turn it into product that, you know, they could sell for a good price, then it could be a sizable portion of their annual income. And so those are the things that we're looking at right now. As, you know, we hit our stride, of course, then of course the tribe is interested in having things that are continually self-sustaining and then help put money back into the tribe.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, based in Alaska's interior, growing across the nation. And by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The Rasmussen Foundation sabbatical program offers nonprofit executives and tribal leaders paid time away from their jobs for personal renewal and growth. As a result, organizations often become stronger. October 1st is the deadline to apply. Learn more at Rasmussen.org. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
The National Park Service is upping the fee for climbing Denali and Mount Foraker. The price hike is aimed at recouping the cost of managing mountaineering on the high peaks. KUAC's Dan Brosh reports from Fairbanks.
The mountaineering user charge is going from the current $200 to $350, except for climbers 24 years of age and under, who will pay $250. Denali National Park spokeswoman Chris Pfister says the fee increase reflects a desire to be fair to all parties.
Allows us to basically recover increased costs for the program, but still being fair, so it's not as much of an impact on the rest of our visitors. We also wanted to go along with Department of Interior, National Parks of Initiatives, encouraging youth to use parks.
The climbing fee for Denali and Foraker dates back to 1995, when the Park Service was charged with setting up a program to reduce accidents and deaths on the mountains. It started at $150 and went to $200 in 2005. The program includes specialized mountaineering rangers who aid and rescue climbers in trouble. The latest fee increase is supported by the nation's largest mountaineering organization, the American Alpine Club. AAC Executive Director Phil Powers says the Park Service came around after initially looking at a much bigger increase.
We were a little surprised when they proposed a $500 fee and suggested or discussed a higher fee than that. But honestly, we were very pleased that when we brought the fact to their attention that there really needed to be more process here, they quite quickly invoked a comment period and hosted public meetings.
Powers says it's costly to have rangers acclimatized and ready to respond at high altitude. He says the Denali fee fits in between those charged for scaling other big popular mountains.
In places like the Nepal Himalaya or the Pakistani Karakoram, you might pay thousands of dollars for a big peak. But, you know, in the United States, there's really only one other fee that I'm aware of, and that's Rainier. And I think it went to $53 here just recently. So Denali is unique in being not only a rather high fee, but it's also a rather expensive program.
Powers says the American Alpine Club supports personal responsibility in the mountains, and paying a reasonable fee for managing a peak like Denali is part of that. But Alaskan Alpine Club board member Doug Buchanan of Fairbanks says his much smaller group is ardently opposed to climbing fees.
This is a tax on the right of the people to walk on their own public land. So we find the National Park Service to be demonstrating the height of repugnance.
The Park Service's Pfister says the new higher fee is designed to raise enough money to cover a greater portion of the cost of mountaineering support, including search and rescue and waste cleanup.
It will help us cover much of the cost of the program that is not covered by base appropriation for the high-altitude helicopter, concession franchise fees, that sort of thing. The program last year was like $1.3 million, and then basically what we had left to cover from cost recovery was a little over $408,000, and we guesstimate from this we'll get about $405,000.
Pfister says the mountaineering fee will be increased incrementally in the future, not to exceed changes in the Consumer Price Index. One other change is that the fee, which takes effect for the 2012 season, will be collected upon registration to climb Denali or Mount Foraker. It will have to be paid in full at time of registration, with a refund of all but $100 if a climber cancels before January 15th. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Sitka's homegrown cruise company has wrapped up its first season, and it's already planning to expand, with sailings to southern Southeast starting next year. Several other small lines also plan to increase capacity in 2012. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Allen Marine has been offering whale watching and other day tours for years. They've been popular with independent and cruise ship tourists stopping in Sitka, Ketchikan, and Juneau. Last year, the company announced plans to expand into the small cruise market with a new brand, Alaskan Dream. It readied the 78-passenger Admiralty Dream for week-long round trips based out of Sitka. Vice President Michael Weems says the season started slow.
By the time we got everything up and running as far as marketing, our May had some very light loads, but every consecutive month we've had some very increase in bookings. And we're sailing the month of August with very impressive loads.
A second ship, the 46-passenger Alaskan Dream, was brought into service when needed. The company is expanding its itineraries in hopes of filling both ships next season. It will add one-way cruises between Juneau and Sitka, and it will begin sailing to Ketchikan.
We'll be offering two departure dates of an 11-day cruise that goes from Sitka to Ketchikan, and that's a complete Southeast Explorer itinerary, which has Glacier Bay, Skagway, Haines, Juneau, Petersburg, Wrangell, and of course Hobart Bay, Tracy Arm.
Alaskan Dream offers the only cruises stopping in Hobart Bay on the mainland between Juneau and Petersburg. The site, owned by Juneau Native Corporation Goldbelt, offers kayaking, ATVs, and small powered inflatable boats. The Sitka-based cruise company is one of several offering up-close small ship voyages in Southeast Alaska. Ween says the difference is the staff and approach.
We've used the philosophy, which we're very proud of, is True Alaska with True Alaskans. And the program that we offer each evening will show a complete history of Alaska and what life is like up here in Alaska 12 months out of the year versus just a couple months out of the year.
Alaskan Dream Cruises is among several small ship companies expanding inside passage sailings next summer. Intersea Discoveries, American Safari, and American Cruise Lines will also increase offerings. They're in part filling a gap left when small ship Pioneer Cruise West went out of business about a year ago.
I think the cruise industry and the small ship cruise industry in Southeast is really starting to see a rejuvenation of sorts.
Hunter McIntosh is chief operating officer of the boat company, which sails between Sitka and Juneau. McIntosh says its two boats, which carry up to a total of 44 passengers, ran at 90% occupancy this year. He calls that phenomenal.
I think what's happening is people are realizing that while our economy is down and while things are difficult, people still want to take vacations. They still want to be able to relax, and they still want to be able to enjoy small ship cruising.
The nonprofit company does not plan to add vessels or itineraries next season, but McIntosh says it will increase the number of guest-hosted tours. This season saw environmental activist and TV documentary producer Philippe Cousteau.
We look to do more of those types of trips with Robert Glenn Ketchum, who's an Ansel Adams Award-winning photographer, with one of our business partners, Orvis, and then bringing fly fishing guides up and doing hosted Orvis trips. And those are the sort of the direction that that we're taking.
Both lines target the upper end of the cruise market. Alaskan Dream charges $1,500 to $7,000 per passenger, depending on trip length and cabin size. Boat company fares run up to $10,000. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Shane Iverson in Bethel, Casey Kelly and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Ed Ronco in Sitka, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. A little communication can save a life. Take time to connect with the ones you love and show them you care. This is National Suicide Prevention Week. Know the signs and take them seriously. For help and information, visit carelinealaska.com or call the 24-hour hotline 1-877-266-HELP. This message is sponsored by the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The future of how Alaskans will produce the energy we need for our homes and businesses is uncertain. The Renewable Energy Alaska Project is committed to developing Alaska's vast renewable energy resources to create a clean, local, and sustainable energy supply. Learn more at realaska.org. This message sponsored by REAP, committed to creating a sustainable economic future for Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.